Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence to the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas. You're right here in my home. We have an awesome program for you tonight, and I am so excited. I have been looking forward to this for a long time, and it's a dream come true. I actually, my favorite show on TV, if anybody knows me, is America's Got Talent. And we have a two-time finalist, that's going to be on our program tonight. But her story, her voice, her determination, her strength, her endurance, her resiliency is even more important than being on probably one of the most famous shows in the country right now. So I'm looking forward to that. Next week, we have the president and founder of Proverbs 31 Mentoring. It's a ministry that is literally trying to help and change women's lives around the world. And that's going to be an awesome program. And then the following week after that, on January 22nd, we have two men that runs a veterans rehabilitation ministry up in Montana. And we casually met the other day on LinkedIn. We fell in love with each other. And these two guys are going to come in and talk about the military and how they're helping veterans get through the PTSD and the transitioning from going from the military out into civilian life. That'll be on January 22nd, and we have just awesome guests coming on after that. So just keep on hanging with us. You know, as we go into, we're in a couple weeks into the 2023 year, and I want to let you know that I have discovered that you and I right now probably have so many reasons to be miserable. But we also have reasons to smile. I don't know anything about the specifics about your circumstances, the reasons that you have, your situations, but I do know that you get to decide on what you focus on in life. And this is so important. I'm going to be really brief because I can't wait to get to our guest. But it's very easy to focus on the things around us that aren't happening, the amount to zero, things that aren't meeting our expectations. And we're making a conscious choice and wasting valuable calories on being unhappy, on being miserable. And when we make those decisions, our mood can snowball into a very dark place pretty darn quick. And all of a sudden, all other pain is amplified as well. And that's commonly referred to in life as the downward spiral. And I want to promise you 10 out of 10 times that the only change in growth you can have comes from breaking that cycle and putting yourself in a new position. Think about it. Every time we've tried something new in our life, learning to walk as a baby, learning to crawl as a baby, learning how to ride a bike, all of those type of things as kids, learning how to write, learning how to play golf, learning how any type of new skill, learning how to play the piano, even though this is my life force now, but learning how to do that was uncomfortable and it caused discomfort. Don't deny yourself the opportunity for a better life simply because you're scared to roll up your sleeves and do some work. And I believe our guest tonight exemplified what work was in her darkest and most painful parts of her life. And she got through that. She worked through that. She had to decide every day to do that. Life is going by. Don't waste a minute of it on being negative, on being offended, on being bitter. Make a choice right now to be happy. Nothing will make you happy unless you choose to be happy. Nothing can make you happy until you can be happy with yourself first. Happiness doesn't come to you. Happiness comes from within you. And that can change your world. Tonight, before you go to bed, or when you start a new day tomorrow, wake up and choose to feel blessed. Choose to feel grateful. Choose to be excited. Choose to be thankful. And choose to be happy. Miserable, happy. The choice is yours. And I don't know why you choose miserable. Try happy and see how it goes for you. All right. I can't wait to just welcome our guest tonight and a fellow Houstonian, although she lives outside of Houston a little bit, and the author of this book. And you can tell, did I like this book or not? I've got sticky notes. I've got all kinds of markings and circles and underlining and highlights. But she has written, and I recommend everybody to get this book tonight. This is a keeper. This is one that you can give to a friend at the office, buy several copies. It will not only inspire you to how to keep on keeping on, choosing joy, choosing to live, but to finding your voice. And it's called More Than My Scars, The Power of Perseverance, Unrelenting Faith, and Deciding What Defines You. Kechi Yaguchi is a Nigerian-born author, a powerful singer, a TEDx speaker, an inspirational person around the country and the world. And she is also a bullying prevention advocate. We're going to talk about all of those different instances tonight. She was on a plane back in 2005, going innocently from Christmas break with 109 passengers. And the plane didn't just have a crash landing. The plane literally fell out of the sky, killing 107 of those passengers, including many of her classmates that was on that plane with her. We're going to talk about that a little bit tonight, but I want to welcome to the program Kechi Yaguchi. Kechi, good evening. How are you?
Good evening. Hi, I'm happy to be here and I'm fine.
Well, you look fine. I just appreciate you being here. I am so honored that you allowed your special time away from other things that you could be doing to be with us tonight, but I really appreciate it. And one thing I just want to say up front, your album that has been released with the Texas Tenors,
Yes, with
Jeffrey Lee.
Yeah, you listened to it. Oh my gosh, thank you.
Unbelievable. And that Don't You Dare. Oh. Are you kidding me? Beautiful song. And I want to talk about all that too, but just thank you for being with us tonight and welcome to the program.
Thank you. Happy to be here, truly, Doctor. Thank you.
So this event that happened in your life, it came from outside of absolutely nowhere.
Nowhere.
It was a typical day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, and I have that mark right here. And the way you write is absolutely unbelievable. Oh, and on page 28, when you say, and then the turbulence started, and you go into this in such depth that I feel like I'm on the plane with you.
Oh, wow.
And it's absolutely unbelievable. How do you fathom, make sense of that now?
Or now?
Now, how do you look back at that when you were younger in grade? No, you were in high school.
I was in high school, yeah, 16.
How do you put that in the full game plan of what life was all about? It wasn't what you expected.
How do you
do that?
Honestly, it was a struggle just envision, like, kind of putting myself back in that place in order to write about that experience as accurately as possible. You know, I had to revisit details about that day that I often don't think about, you know, now. And it was definitely very difficult, but I felt like I needed to really paint the most realistic, the most honest picture of what that felt like in the moment, you know? And so I had to take myself back to how that felt in the moment. And that authentic reaction live as it was happening was what I tried to portray in the book. And even as I was writing it and remembering it, it was like a movie, you know? As it was happening, I remember feeling like this was so unreal. It was just so unrealistic that this would happen in real life. And thinking back, it's still even more so, in fact, unrealistic, because it's just not something that happens often, you know, and the person, you know, the person who experiences it lives to tell about it. So it's still a very kind of surreal situation for me. And one that I just can't believe that one, much less two people actually survived it. So, it was unexpected, unplanned for, and just completely derailed my trajectory in life. Whatever I had planned didn't matter anymore once that happened, and hasn't mattered since, honestly.
You know, I was overwhelmed when you mentioned, and it starts off just a little bit of turbulence, and then you even had a line in there. It's no big deal. Everything's fine.
It's fine.
And then it continued on.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then utter chaos, screams of terror. Jesus, Jesus, and what's happening? Oh God, what's happening? And then when you reached over and grabbed
my friend,
your friend's hand, tell me about that moment.
Yeah, that was it was just like, it was like a reflex kind of thing, because, you know, what do you do? What do you do? You know, and I couldn't even see anything, so I didn't know what was going on. I could just feel just the pressure in the cabin that just felt wrong. And everything just felt wrong being in that plane. And amidst all the screaming, you know, I grabbed my friend's hand like a lifeline, really, because, you know, she wasn't the only person I was familiar with on that plane, but she was the closest to me, and she was physically the closest to me. So seeing her was like, and grabbing her hand, it was kind of like trying to grab onto something that made sense. And something that, like, would be like an anchor, kind of, you know, in this crazy situation. And seeing her eyes, you know, seeing her face mirror mine and my expression and my feelings definitely didn't help, because it meant that this was real. We were both experiencing this exact same thing, and it was happening to both of us, and neither of us could help the other person out of that situation.
So that was the last thing you remembered, correct?
The last thing I remember is looking into her eyes, holding her hands, and speaking to her. You know, speaking to her, saying, should we pray? What's going on? Just exchanging those few words. And that's the last thing that I remember, like the last action I recall doing before the darkness just kind of came and took over. And then I was opening my eyes into a whole different scene. But that's the last thing I remember being on that plane.
You know, the way you write, even when you was in the coma state of mind and going in and out of that with dreams that you were having,
is
unbelievable. Because this would be an unbelievable movie. And I don't know if anybody's ever mentioned to you about or approached you about
that's interesting movie. You mentioned that because, yeah, I kind of have been more recently since like last year, been in talks about that. So that would be cool.
I hate to just keep going back, but this is so well written. And I don't want everybody to say, hey, well, you're letting all the cats out of the bag because this book is good from cover to cover. But when you mention it's in the book, the coma, I mean, it's in the chapter called The Coma, that you actually talked about the insane feeling of pressure in your arms and your legs and like it was going to explode.
Mm-hmm.
And was that because of the actual physical pain that you were enduring from all these burns across your body, or was it just the impact of what happened, or what caused all that pressure that you were feeling at the time?
It was not about the pain, but about my body's physical reaction to the burns, actually. So the fire burning, you know, my flesh and my skin had caused my literal skin to expand, you know, and like just expand with so much liquid. It's apparently a thing that happens with extreme burn situations. So it was just a bodily reaction to the burns. You know, it for some reason the body just kind of swells up like almost twice its size with liquid, essentially, as though it's trying to retain as much liquid as it can, you know, because of the burns. So that's what happened to my skin, my body, my flesh, my muscle, everything just kind of expanded. And so I literally was feeling pressure, like my body was going to burst like a balloon. That's how I felt. And it was a real thing. It was a real thing that was happening. And my mom said that my body swelled to like more than half its size, to the point that like when the doctors saw me like 24 hours later, they like when I, because the I was transferred to South Africa from Nigeria within like 24 hours. And when I first arrived in South Africa, the people who got me, the emergency treatment people that got me in South Africa that received me, thought that I was a guy, like I was a man. That's how like much my body expanded. And, you know, because of my high school, I had short hair because everyone has to cut their hair. So it didn't help matters either, you know, but that's just something that apparently happens like to the body, like biologically, with when it gets in contact with like third degree burns, essentially. So that's what that pressure was. It was horrible. It was a horrible.
Do you remember the mental thoughts that was going through your mind? Because you was coming out of the coma, and you said, as I lay there with my arm still raised, I felt my entire body go numb again. And then you mentioned that I was no longer oriented. So now I could actually see the hand that was raised up.
Mm-hmm.
And all I could see was
my skin,
raw red flesh, mm-hmm, and literal strips hanging off my lower arm, palms, and fingers.
Yep.
And it came into your mind, that's my skin.
Yeah. Yep.
How did that affect you?
Honestly,
what ran through your mind during that time?
I was just in awe, really. There was really no time, at least in that situation, to like react to the fact that my skin was like literally hanging off me in shreds. It wasn't a reaction like, oh my God, what am I going to do? How is this going to get fixed? It was just like awe that skin would do that in the first place, you know, like, you know, I kind of didn't really register anything past the fact that like my skin was doing something that it was not supposed to be doing. And that was really all I had the presence of mind to do at that time, was just kind of like take stock of the situation and just realize like, whoa, like, why is that happening? What the heck is going on? At that point, I really couldn't even think about the fact that like this had been caused by a plane crash. So the correlations had not even had a chance to happen in my head. I was just fully reaction, it was a fully reactionary behavior that I had. All I was doing was reacting to my current circumstances. So putting things together, you know, about how this happened, what it meant, all that stuff came much later. I didn't have the presence of mind to go further than that. So it was really in that moment, just like once I got numb and the pain meds started working and I could actually kind of like see what was happening around me. The only things I cared about was the fact that my mom was finally there with me to just kind of help make sense of the situation and make me calm. And that I could see that my skin was not doing what skin was supposed to do. You know, right. That was pretty much it. And
the anchor of your mom's voice was powerful, right?
It was the single most important thing in that moment for me. In fact, from that moment up until years past, in fact, but more critical in that moment and the next 7 months that were to come.
For her to read the Bible to you, read to you, and then when you still had the breathing tube in, you mouth just talk.
Yeah.
And you just wanted to hear her talk. And she would just talk about random things.
Everything and anything. Just to feel, the important thing, not really what she was saying, but just that she was saying something. That it was her voice saying them to me.
Wow.
And
you were in, because, you know, if people want to know all about that story, I can go every page, every paragraph, because it just grabs you. And when you pick it up, you won't put it down until you finish it, I promise you. When you finally came around and your mom, you said, "How's everybody else?"
Yeah.
And your mom didn't tell you full truth.
No, she said
because of the impact that would have had on you at that time. That was probably the wisest decision.
Oh yeah.
But then when you found out the truth, that had to put you in a spiral of. Because you cried yourself to sleep. You probably cried every tear that you had, plus more, all night long when you found out they're all gone.
Yeah, that was definitely, despite everything I'd been through so far, that was definitely the hardest part of the entire experience. Realizing that, like, no matter how bad my situation was, I was the lucky one. That was a hard pill to swallow. The fact that this is really bad. I've gone through at least 3 months of this, and I know that this is a really bad situation to be in. It's very painful. There's just a lot of negative things about it. Yet I was actually the one who was in the most advantageous situation. Like I was the most lucky out of everyone that was from my school, at least, that was on that plane, you know, because there were two survivors. It wasn't just me, but I was the only one who survived from my school. So just realizing that I was the only one, you know, I think it was a necessary perspective change for me. You know, it helped me just kind of stop seeing things. So it helped me stop this spiral of self-pity that I had been on, you know, where I was grateful I was alive, but I was feeling kind of like down that I seemed to be in the worst position with the injuries. Realizing that was not the case was shattering, but also a very necessary reality check, you know. And then when the gravity of what it meant to be the only one that survived from my school started to hit in like kind of in stages, you know, the fact that, okay, so none of those people I was on the plane with made it. Okay, so my friends aren't. They didn't make it. Oh, so Tucker didn't make it. Okay, so their parents didn't have, like, their kids didn't come back from school. They got bodies. You know, just thinking about things like that, I think it was just layers and layers of what it meant to be the only survivor from my school that kept hitting me, you know, in waves, and just kept making me kind of spiral more and more into this really dark place. Where it was like, I didn't understand. It was less
about... How often did you ask yourself, why me?
It was really less about why did I make it? Why was it me? Why me? And more about, why didn't others make it? You know, I was in the process of learning so much about this apparently all-powerful God that could do anything and save anyone, had saved me. And now I'm finding out that he didn't save 107 other people that were on that plane, 60 of whom were children. And so I just could not understand, like, clearly you can save us because you saved two people. Why not save everyone? It made no sense to me. And it made me really upset because it was like, it was contrary to what I was learning about him and how powerful and how strong and how much he cared about us. And I'm hearing that, like, he didn't save everyone. Like, why wouldn't he save everyone? So it was the focus, I think, for me was always more about, like, I didn't understand why he wouldn't just go ahead and save every single other person. You know, why put all those other parents and those families in this kind of painful situation, you know, where they have to bury their kids or their little sister or brother or whatever, you know? I think that was what it was for me, really. So, because I was always grateful that I was alive. I was grateful for I recognized fully that this was a second chance at life that a lot of people did not get when they were in a similar situation. So I could not be ungrateful for a life that like made my mother so happy specifically, you know, that it just, I couldn't be unhappy about that, no matter how difficult it was to stay alive. But I just felt like every other parent deserved to at least have that, you know, and they didn't. And it made me really, really sad for them. So I think that was really where most of my grief came from.
Right. Since then, have you come to peace with that? Yeah. And how do you manage that type of reality check of, hey, God's more powerful than what I know. I don't know the game plan, but how do you actually wrestle with that and get any kind of peace?
Well, for me, it was, it came down to some very simple concepts. You know, number one, what role was I going to allow this tragedy to play in my life? And also, what role was I going to allow God to play in my life? You know, I could either see him as this like wicked being who chose not to save children, let them die, and let this tragedy happen, and just, you know, picks and chooses who he wants to save. Or I could see him as just this like fictional character that did not really exist because, you know, life just happens and we're just all subject to fate. Or I could see him as a place of refuge when things go bad, when things go so bad that you literally feel like you will die if you have to bear this burden on your own. I could see him as a place to go to replenish my strength and to be comforted when things are painful and hard, and to be rejuvenated and given strength to continue living this hard life these cards I've been dealt. And up until that point, I had luckily, well, you would say at least luck, it felt lucky to me that I had experienced things that literally had not come from my mom or from my dad or from my family, feelings of peace that really didn't make any sense considering what situation I was in, that had proven to me that at the very least, there was something out there that was beyond humanity, you know? Wow. So I had gotten to that point in my life, in my treatment, in my journey, in this burn survivor journey, where that had become a fact to me. So I couldn't deny that there was something there in the first place. And I was trying to learn about that something, you know? So I couldn't say it was fictional. That much was just impossible. Not with all the weird thing that had happened around me, the weird dreams, the visions, and just so many things that were just so unexplainable concepts, like, you know, human concepts, you know, I had to go beyond that to understand them. So on that basis alone, that scrapped that second choice. And then I didn't want to see him as a God of vengeance because he hadn't proven to be that in my life so far either. He had healed me and answered prayers in ways that I didn't believe were possible until they happened to me. And so I knew that he could do good things. I knew that he wanted good things for the people that he loved, and he loved all of us. So, and I had been an example of that love many, many times so far. So this one situation where it turns out that he didn't do things as I expected him to, shouldn't change the core of who he is, you know, to me or to anyone else. And so this is something, these are perspectives that came to me, not just like in a vision or like an epiphany, but through like a lot of just effort from my parents, from my mom specifically, my grandma, my aunt, people who were pouring life into me, reading the Bible to me and trying to show me God, not so much in just reading the Bible to me, but in their actions and the way that they exemplified the things that they said he was about. So he had put people in my life that were literally living examples of the love that he said he had for us. And so I could not see someone like my mom or my aunt or my dad and feel like he did not love us, because the amount of love and support I got from these people alone was enough for me to understand that he definitely put the right people in my life to deal with what I was going through. So I see him that way. Yeah, I just wanted to see him as he's not the person who causes bad things to happen, but he is there when they do happen so that we can, you know, gain strength and comfort from him. You know, that was the way that I chose to see him. So it was a choice. And choosing that made all the difference.
That's a great catch. I tell you what, we're going to take our only break tonight. 888-627-6008. My phone is just vibrating like crazy. People are coming across. We're getting things on the Facebook of people that you are touching and motivating and moving. When we come back after this break, it's only about a minute break, I want to find out why the title of the book, and then we'll talk more about the faith. Hang with us. We'll be right back. 888-627-6008 if you want to call in. Be right back. Hang with us.
From HCI Publishing that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back, and do me a favor, don't go on Amazon tonight and buy my book. Go on Amazon tonight and buy this one, because this will absolutely, yeah, my book's all right, but this book will absolutely lay you out. And enough people have bought my book. But I tell you what, we have a couple questions that I think is really good. Kimberly has said, matter of fact, she loves your book. She has bought multiple copies
for family
and friends. And she said, thanks for sharing it. But she also asked, do you still keep in touch with Toki's mom? I don't know if you pronounce it Toki or Toke, but Toki's mom. Okay. Do you still keep in touch with her?
Toke's mom. That was a hard relationship to maintain for sure for both of us. Just because of just how personal the loss was to her, to me. So after I moved to America, we lost touch completely. I saw her sometimes before I moved here. So between 2006 and 2007, that's the period of time where I was in South Africa and then eventually again in Nigeria before I came to America. So during that time in Nigeria, yes, we kept in touch. We talked. We had a very, very important conversation before I came to America that I think was something that we both needed to have. You know, it was kind of, it wasn't really about closure, but I think it definitely just helped her specifically a lot to just hear some details from me that she probably would never have known had she not visited me. And we just talked and prayed together. And I think that there was a lot of healing that happened during that visit that sustained us moving forward. But I did reach out to her when I was writing my book to make sure that it was okay to document our conversation for everyone else to read, basically. So I wanted to make sure that she would be okay with that. So I reached out to her after more than 10 years or so of living in America, and just knowing that she's alive and she's okay back home. But yeah, I reached out to her. This was in 2020. Okay. And I just basically, you know, we talked a little bit, caught up, you know, on each other's lives a little bit. And then I let her know what was going on. I was writing this book and I told her what I wanted to do, how I wanted to talk about her and myself in our conversation. And I sensed like the entire part like of the book that she would be mentioned in to her to vet and make sure she was okay with it before I edited to my book. And she was well, thank God. And she gave me the approval that I needed. And yeah, that's so I have, because of the book, I have talked to her recently.
The title, More Than My Scars. You come up with that?
Yes, I did.
Why?
I mean, it's just who I am. there's no better phrase to describe me as a person, I believe. And it's my mantra. It's quite literally my life mantra. I am more than my scars. And I think that I feel that so deeply inside me, and I believe that so deeply about myself. And I want that to be the truth for everyone else out there who may have encountered any kind of trauma, whether it's as obvious as mine or invisible, all are valid. And I wanted to choose a title that I believed in, that I wholeheartedly embodied, and that I felt like other readers might also relate to. So that's why I chose More Than My Scars.
When you was on America's Got Talent, one of the guest judges, one of the nights that you was on, was Seal. Yes. And he made the comment to you after he applauded the way you sang, which I can imagine that's only was overwhelming for you. But he said you personify strength through vulnerability. You remember the comment?
I will never forget it.
Yeah, that's powerful. Strength through vulnerability.
It meant a lot to me, like that he would
come up and hug you that night, right?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. It was really a very touching moment for me that he would see me, hear me sing, encounter me, and say those words to me. It made me feel validated, really, that I was living my life and putting out there what it is that I wanted to put out there about myself and about just what it means to just be a human being, you know, living in a world that is flawed, essentially. So I was very grateful that that's how he saw me. And I was just, it was just very humbling, honestly, you know, because he didn't know me from anywhere, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was very, very, very touched by that. Sincere, and I will never forget it, literally.
You know, vulnerability, I think in your case, I applaud you, because when I go on your website and look, when you're out doing things, when you sing, even on America's Got Talent, the times you have, you try not to cover anything up. This is who you are right now. And oh, that reminds me, the song This Is Me is my favorite on your album. But anyway, it's so beautiful that you don't try to, you know, always wear long sleeves, always wear, you know, all the way down to the ankle pants. And matter of fact, Evelyn on Facebook says, how do you handle and how did you handle the people that stared at you at first, knowing that you were different? How did that impact you emotionally? And how did you handle that?
So with the staring, honestly, it's hard for me to be offended by it because I do have awareness of how I look. I don't look conventional or normal anyway, as far as the standards of normal go anywhere in the world. I think it's only natural for my parents objectively to, draw attention or to at least gain like a second glance from a stranger. So when I think about, I'm very, what's the word? I tend to easily see things from other people's perspectives, I suppose. So I believe if, we flip the situation, if it was like flipped, I would also kind of give a person who looked like me a second glance because it's just human nature. Most people are not doing it to be offensive. They're just like surprised by someone who looks the way that I do, the way that my scars have changed my face. So I think it's only natural. And so I typically just reflexively afford people that grace, essentially,
Wow.
to believe that most of the time people are not just out to get you or out to make you feel bad about yourself. They're just surprised,
You
And
know,
so
we thought we were just going to be interviewing you and your story, but you're revealing to me your heart. And that is an unbelievable statement that you just made, that you allow them that grace. Wow. That tells me what kind of person you really are.
Oh wow, you're so kind. Thank you. It's really how I feel, and I have to say also, I can only kind of give what I get, and it's the same. It's the other way around is right too. I can only get what I give out there into the world. So I think that despite what has happened to me and how different has made me look physically, I have experienced 99% more positive than negative from just random people, based on my appearance, honestly. And even if anyone was saying anything bad about me, it's not to my face. So I can't really be bothered about things that I'm not aware of. If you don't say it to me, then how am I supposed to know about it? So I don't bother thinking about that. I just worry about what's done in front of me, And most of that stuff that has been done in front of me has been positive. So the ratio is very good and good enough for me to feel comfortable enough to just kind of live my life in my new, skin, I suppose, without worrying about what other people think. I'm lucky enough to have not been impacted further than my physical, like my skin, literally, with this accident. I didn't lose any limbs. I think that alone is a blessing that I have to celebrate by just doing all the things I can do, thankfully, can still do despite what happened to me. And the fact that what happened to me can actually be as bad as taking away people's limbs and things like that. I know that, like, in the grand scheme of things, I can still run, jump, hold things, touch things. I mean, I'm grateful for that. So I live my life as such, and I do things that I would have done whether or not the accident happened, so because that's a privilege that I have despite how bad this was. So yeah, I think that's pretty much how I, to answer the question more directly, that's pretty much how I live my life. I go around just not assuming that people are thinking the worst or want the worst for me or whatever. And most encounters have been kind. So I think me just putting my authentic self out there has allowed me to receive authenticity from the world as well, more than not. So it's made it more and more easy to just be myself. Yeah.
That's good. When I read a book, and I read the book for all the guests that are on, but I always try to find a line or a sentence that is the line. And I found this in called The Drive chapter. It says, "But then when your life gets derailed and everything is suddenly away from you, be it beauty, fame, fortune, money, or even just the promise of all these things that arguably make life more interesting and worthwhile, when all you have left is just your life itself,
It is.
what happens to your drive? What keeps you going when you have nothing left?" Powerful. Unbelievable. Everybody ought to ask themselves that question.
That was, yeah. I felt, you know, writing. Yeah, I remember that. That's like almost like a one of the first things that I thought about, you know, in the beginning. This was like when things just started. I hadn't even gone to the worst of things at that point. That was a point in my life where I was still hanging in the balance, really. You know, it was still not completely certain whether or not I would survive what I was going through. And I think that that's exactly why that thought process mattered, because I felt like I literally was hanging on by a thread. I didn't have anything, and it was just as easy to, if not easier, it was easier in that time, in that moment, to just let go and stop struggling so hard to stay inside this body that felt broken beyond repair. It would have been so much easier to just let go and just float off away and float away from life, essentially. But I needed an anchor. I needed something that was not external, you know, to hold on to. I needed, even if it was, I just needed something external, internal, whatever. I needed something to hold on to. And at that point, I had nothing in my life except the life itself to use as a reason to hold on, you know? So that's why I grasped onto my mom with all my life, the rest of everything I had, because that was at least something that was tangible, that I knew was real and steady, steadfast, that could give me a reason to just keep going a few extra hours a day into a few, like one day after the other, into one week after the other, until I got to a point where it became a kind of self-competition. How much further can I go? How much more can I survive? Can I make it to next month? Can I make it? It became, you know what? I want to see just how far I can actually go when it comes to staying alive. And I think that that's what I was trying to like describe when I meant like, you know, what do you when all you have is just the life bare as it is? How do you grasp onto something as a reason to stay? And at that point, it had to just be this self will to just keep on proving to myself that I could stay, I could continue. And but to get there was, without my mom, it would have just been impossible, honestly. She was the catalyst, really.
Right.
So, and I think
Now,
that's the important thing. You need something. It doesn't matter what, you need something.
when you finally came here to America,
Yeah.
went down to the Shriners Hospital, it was right down the street here at Galveston,
Yep.
okay? And you had over 120 different surgeries and
Yep.
procedures and skin grafts, and I don't even know there's different numbers on
Yeah.
different news reports, but a lot
A lot.
of treatment there at Shriners in Galveston.
Yes,
What do you
definitely.
think of that place? Do you go back and visit?
Yes, I do.
And you get to go up and talk to the kids and share with them and
Yep, I do. And I do that at events as well, where I meet different burn survivors, burn ambassadors. I'm also a patient ambassador for Shriners, and they have others, you know, who are current patients. And yeah, I'm always happy to give back to Shriners, like in whatever capacity I can, because they quite literally gave me back my life, my
right.
independence. You know, they gave me back the ability to live the way I'm living now. So I owe that to them, at the very least, to encourage other people the way that they encourage me, to show also these kids what life looks like when you leave the hospital. You know, it's not just hospitals, even though it feels that way in the beginning, but that's not all your life is going to be. There is life after all that. And I believe I am proof of that. And I want to show that to these kids to give them something to look forward to that's fun. You know, that's not just surgeries, I think. So yeah.
That's great. That's great. Now, America's Got Talent. You were on that and you became the finalist, and then I believe you went on the America's Got Talent, the champions,
Yeah, I
something
did.
like that, and you got Simon Cowell's golden buzzer. Now, what did that do for you?
That
Not many people get that.
was so affirming. I think it was like him telling me that he believed that I had earned my spot in this talent show, you know, based on my talent and not just because I had this, well, honestly, incredible story. You know, it, at the end of the day, it's a show about talents. And I definitely struggled, especially the first time around, in I struggled with seeing myself as like deserving to be there with everyone.
Was that when he told you to stop singing and take a breath, take a drink of water?
That was the very first time in 2017.
That was the first time. Yeah. Oh, I was watching that. It was like, oh my Lance Simon, what are you doing? But what it did, it just let you restart,
yes,
reset.
It did.
And you seemed to relax.
Felt like, yeah, he literally gave me a second chance that day. That was it, because he obviously felt like I could do better. And, you know, he's been known to do that a bunch of other times with different people. So experiencing that firsthand was nerve wracking as heck, but I needed it because I wasn't giving my honest best the first time around. I was too nervous. So I'm glad he did that for me. But like during that golden buzzer moment, which was the second time I was on the show, I felt just really validated really by that buzzer, because I felt like he was trying to tell me that, you know, he really felt like I had something there and I deserve to be here. Like this AGT champions, that I was one of the people that they felt embodied that phrase, you know?
Yeah.
So I was very grateful, so shocked, completely blindsided by it, but it was a true honor. You know, it really was. And of course, you know, it brought a lot of great things, great attention, great opportunities and things like that. And I think in the grand scheme of things, being on that show was really the main thing I've gotten from it, is that platform, you know, that I have right now. So I will always be like just eternally grateful to that show for what they did for me in my life.
Have they given you the opportunity to be on this latest champion series that's coming up
the last
2 weeks?
The All-Star one. No, I haven't. No, they haven't reached out. They typically would if they wanted to, but they haven't. No, they haven't reached out for that. But I have been a part of their Vegas lineup for a while. I was on it last year in 2022.
Really?
Yeah. Towards the second half of 2022, I went on the Vegas show in Luxor Theater, I believe. Luxor, yeah.
Luxor, yeah.
And I was on their lineup for quite a few shows, stretches of shows in 2022. And I'm going to be featuring on that a lot as well this 2023. So it's pretty cool how they kind of try to keep you within the, I guess, family, you know, quote unquote, and just continue to give you more like opportunities, you know, to just showcase your talent. And so I'm looking forward to more shows this year as well. But yeah.
Well, that'd be great. Next time I go to Vegas, I'm going to go to that one and hopefully you'll be on. And,
I'll definitely announce when I am there so that people who follow me or who know me can get an opportunity if they have a chance to come check out one show. It's really a fun show. So
that'd be great.
Highly, yeah.
How can people get in touch with you? Get on your website, get your music, get the book, all of those different ways. What's the best way to just reach out to you, Ketchy?
Best way to reach out to me, definitely social media and my website. So my website is ketchyofficial.com, and my social media, specifically Facebook and Instagram, I'm very active on there, and Twitter as well. Just type in Ketchy and look for the blue check mark, and that's going to be me. And I look forward to all of you reaching out and send me DMs. Let me know what you think about the show, about my book, my music, if you get to listen or read any of that stuff. And just keep in touch. Stay tuned. And hopefully this year will be an interesting one for me and for y'all as well. So, yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing tonight. And I really recommend everybody right now, get on the website, like it, follow on every one of her social sites. That's always just a good thing to do. Also, get on Amazon and like and review the book.
Yes, please.
It's so hard to get people to review books.
It's the hardest thing. But I'm grateful for all the ones I have so far.
Absolutely. That was just always help. And before you go to bed tonight, everybody that's listening, go on YouTube and type in Ketchy and This Is Me, and then the song Don't You Dare. Oh. Don't go to bed without listening to both of those songs. Absolutely will
so
lay
much.
You out.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you.
Thank you, Ketchy. It's been great. It's been an honor. Anytime you want to come back, you are welcome here. And anything we can do for you here, Let us know, and I will see you in Vegas
Yes.
in one of those programs. I promise you that. That's going to be awesome. Thank you for sharing. Thank
Oh.
you for being a champion and showing your heart.
Thank
And you definitely did that tonight. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me, Dr. William. It's been a pleasure.
Appreciate it. Thank you. As we do every show, well, I'm just so, this was awesome. We do every show and close out. No matter what you've gone through, and you see this in Ketchy's life, no matter what, it could be the darkest day, the darkest time of life, the darkest, worst, horrible, tragic accident that could ever happen. There's always hope. There's always hope. And we saw that in our guests tonight. Get this book. You will not be disappointed. I promise you. Thank you again, Ketchy, for being with us. God bless. Have an awesome week. And we'll see you right here next week, live for another edition of Breaking the Silence from Houston, Texas. God bless. Have an awesome week.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1. For the next episode of Breaking the Silence.